But let's say you take an industrial property, just a large, maybe warehouse or something like that, and you divide it up. So you take 10,000 square feet and you change it into 5 2,000 square foot spaces. You give each space their own roll-up door, high ceilings, maybe a little bit of office space, but mostly what we'd call flex industrial. So high ceilings and a little bit of office. And then the amount of clients you can attract to that type of space right now is huge.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Alan Siebenhaller has flipped over 250 units, homes, apartments, buildings, and condos. He had made single transaction profits of over $1 million and has bought and sold in 9 different states. His projects have also been featured on HGTV. Alan, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. The pleasure is mine, Alan. There are 3 questions I ask every guest who comes on the show. In 90 seconds or less, can you tell me, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Where did I start? So I started with the desire to have some financial control over my future. I got a hold of the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad. This was over 23 years ago. And I decided to start in real estate. And I got my real estate license and started in commercial real estate because I wanted to learn from real estate investors. So those are my clients. I was helping them buy and reposition retail centers, office buildings, industrial complexes, apartment buildings, and I just learned a ton. I didn't make a lot of money starting out as a commercial real estate agent, but the wealth was in the knowledge that I picked up. What was the second question?
Where are you now?
Where am I now? So now I am 23 years down that journey. I started personally as an investor with one fixer condo, and we moved into it and fixed it up while living in it, my wife and I, and somehow survived that, and then moved out of it, rented it out, and then just kept moving forward. Eventually bought a 4 unit, fixed it up, rented it out, then started doing some 1031 exchanges up into larger properties and then into apartment buildings. And then during the Great Recession in 2009, commercial deals stopped. So I started raising capital and then flipping homes. We were buying them on the courthouse steps in Los Angeles. And we started buying these homes off of banks, repositioning them and selling them, you know, retail to like first-time home buyers. And so now I have moved up in that portfolio. I've actually ironically sold most off. Fortunately, I sold my largest multifamily last February, which I think was kind of at the peak of the multifamily market. And I'm repositioning to re-enter the market. We actually just bought our first construction project. It is a bit of a flip. It's a multi-million dollar flip. And now we're going to be repositioning ourselves back into the market, kind of taking advantage of a lot of the buyers sitting on the sidelines and having less competition. So we are actively looking right now.
Is that the actively looking right now that's back into the multifamily space?
That's a good question. It depends. I'm in California, based out of Santa Barbara, California, and I'm not going to go long distance unless I have a multifamily, first of all, that's large enough, meaning well north of 100 units, be able to have a really good management company and a full-time presence on the property. And also I'd want it in an A location, but with value add, right? So that I can get really good demographics of tenants by adding value to the property, repositioning it, improving it. Then I might go out of state. In terms of in our area, we're on the coast, so prices are really high, but I really like the model of repositioning industrial space into flex space and breaking it up into smaller spaces, which we can talk about when we talk about industrial and flex. But I'm looking for that. I also like the boutique hotel model. I've done a lot of short-term rentals, Airbnbs, furnished corporate rentals in our apartment buildings over the past 15 years. And so transitioning that into a hospitality model, like boutique hotels in wine country, looking up and down the coast here in wine country. So that's kind of fun.
Absolutely. How do you decide? I mean, you've done so much. You've seen so many aspects of this business, how do you decide what it is that you're going to focus on for the foreseeable future?
Man, that's a good question. I'll do my best to answer it. One is based on the team of support I have around me. Real estate's a team sport. So there's no way I can pull off what we do on my own. So I have to have the right team. And that's everyone from, it could be my investors that I have on board. It could be the contractor and renovation team, because typically we're doing value add. You know, we're not just buying something that's already completely turned around. So I have to have the right team in position in that area to know and have confidence. And we can build a team fairly quickly, but my team here, my home base, you know, we can only go so far, and then we're out of range, and then I'd have to build a whole new team. So a lot of it will depend on that. And of course, on the opportunity. Sometimes when you find the right opportunity, you can quickly build a team around it, but that's higher risk, because when you're using a new team that's not seasoned, a lot more things can go wrong. And typically, you know, you'll have turnover and you'll have to get to the point where you actually have a good team, if that makes sense.
It does indeed. Yeah. And no, I appreciate your insights there on that front. So just to clarify, I mean, you've done a lot of different things over the years. You've got a high end construction. You said a project flip. I think you mentioned that.
Yeah.
There in the things you're working on right now as well.
Yeah.
What type of a project is that?
Yeah. Right now it's really a fun project. We are working on basically a luxury flip. It's full ocean view, 180 degree view of the ocean and city. It overlooks the city of Santa Barbara, harbor views. You can see the sailboats going in and out. And we purchased it for $2.5 million, and we're putting about $400,000 into it. And we're repositioning it into like a modern beach feel. When I say modern and beach, those two terms kind of clash, but so it's not modern, it's like a modern beach. So wide plank floors, lots of whites and woods, and we're creating this feel to it that'll just modernize the property. And with that view, we can afford a lot of upside if the project's done right.
Yeah, no, absolutely. How do you go about, I mean, I'm just really curious, you know, when you say luxury ocean flip, I'm thinking like, okay, 2.9 million, why would, it seems like that seller could just sell it open market as opposed to selling it probably to somebody that's looking to renovate it and flip it. I mean,
yeah,
how do you,
it was a motivated seller. It was, you know, it's what you're looking for, is a motivated seller. It was a divorce and the property had been neglected for years. Mm. And so the inside of it looked like it was dated, you know, 1980s. The outside is like 1970s stucco. So we're just modernizing everything. The stucco, we're turning it into a smooth plaster. We're adding a bunch of custom features to the property. You know, everything cosmetically is changing on the property. And then we're doing some value add where we're making, because it's up high with a view, there's not as much flat yard. So we're adding a retaining wall and adding some more yard space, which is huge to have yard space with an ocean view. So there's just certain things we're doing that they would have never done because they were divorced and, you know, unfortunately fighting. And so we're able to come in and solve those problems and reposition it for a higher end buyer to come in and say, that's my home. I want to live the rest of my days in, and purchase it at a, you know, at what would be a good return for us.
Right. No, that's awesome. I love that. I don't know where you live currently or what your house looks like, but when you see projects like that with, what do you say, 180 degree ocean views, is it tough not to be like, man, I should just move in here instead?
Yeah. I think about that every day. I'm thinking, how do I keep this property? You know, maybe one of the exit strategies as well is that we'd keep it and we rent it out as a, what you call midterm rental.
Yep.
So 30 days or more, because in that area, like a lot of areas right now, you can't do short-term rentals,
right,
but you can do midterm. So I could have someone come down from Canada, or, you know, Memphis in the winter time, you want to come out here and get some sunshine and look at the ocean all day. You might rent it for a month or 3 months, and we can get a really good rental rate from that. And so that is another exit strategy, is just to hold it and rent it midterm furnished.
Right. Oh, that's cool. I love it. Those got to be kind of fun projects there to work on, which is not necessarily, you know, the standard just basic flip. It is something where you get to use your creative skills and actually see a fun project come come full circle. That's awesome. Let's talk a little bit about so that's the construction project flip you mentioned right there. You said something about industrial to flex.
Yes.
What is, I don't even know what that means. Can you break that?
Yeah, that's a really exciting strategy. You've seen it. I know you've seen it. It's happening across the country right now. But let's say you take an industrial property, just a large, maybe warehouse or something like that, and you divide it up. So you take, I'll just use the analogy, 10,000 square feet, and you change it into 5 2,000 square foot spaces. You give each space their own roll-up door, high ceilings, maybe a little bit of office space, but mostly what we'd call flex industrial. So high ceilings and a little bit of office. And then the amount of clients you can attract to that type of space right now is huge. Okay. You have everything from CrossFit gyms to every contractor you could think of, plumbers, wood floors, tile, HVAC to, I'm even seeing wine bars going in our area. We live in a little bit of wine country, and you have wine bars going into these industrial spaces and, setting up a tasting area and breweries going in. And, so we're seeing all this kind of just intersection between retail and industrial happening. And just for that cool sort of feel of high ceilings and a roll-up door, you can do a lot with that. And that's a very popular trend right now that I'm pretty excited about.
Oh yeah. No, I can certainly see the appeal, because there's so, like you said, there's so many different uses for it that even for some of the stuff that we're doing, I'm like, gosh, that'd be fantastic. If you have a little 2 or 4,000 square foot, I mean, that would just, you can serve a lot of customers that mm-hmm. way, each in their own, I think, unique way. And they're probably not limited in from a zoning perspective. I mean, you're probably not fighting if it's zoned industrial and they're putting a wine tasting bar in, like, who actually cares?
Yeah. Usually you're okay, but you have to work with the government. But the most exciting part about it for the investor is that when you're dividing up that space, you're now going to a much higher price per square foot on, because of economies of scale, right? Because now you're not leasing a 10,000 square foot space. Now you're leasing 5 2,000 square foot spaces. So you can imagine what that does to your income on the property at the end of the day. Now it costs you something. I mean, we looked at one just yesterday where we realized that if we did this on this property, we divided it up. We estimated, let's say it cost us $300,000 to do it. Just because it needed the ceilings blown out, it needed a lot of stuff. But let's say it cost us $300,000 to divide up this industrial property. We ran the numbers on what the new rent would be. And because these commercial properties, the value is determined by the rent and by the leases that back them, we ran a cap rate analysis and figured out that that property would go up in value by $1 million. So spending $300,000 to go up by $1 million, we're like, man, that's a green light, right? That's a good one. And so that's where it gets really exciting, is that much more than residential, you can improve and you kind of have to, fight with the price per square foot and compare it to other residential properties. With commercial, you can improve. And if your income goes up, the value goes up accordingly. Right. So that's a pretty exciting strategy to use.
Absolutely. No, I think that's really, really cool. Are there certain types of assets or certain, I guess, profiles of buildings that people should be looking out for, or even locations in general that people should be looking out for to say, hey, these would be the types of assets that this could work in, or that strategy could work in?
Yeah, good question. I think, you have to put on your hat of what would it be like to be the end user of this property, right? So if I'm the investor, I'm thinking, if I'm going to divide this up, who are my end users? And we just went through some of them. My end user is a contractor. So what's important to a contractor? Well, they want probably as big of a roll-up door as possible that I can get away with in my current zoning. They probably want ceilings as high as possible. They want some storage area. They might want some power. If I can upgrade the power, that would be great. you know, and then they might want a little bit of office space to be able to go in there and close the door, or have someone go in there and do the books and close the door. So just thinking through, what would your end user want? And some end users won't want any office space. If it's going to be, you know, the CrossFit gym or the wine bar sort of space, they might just want it as big and open as possible. So just thinking about what an end user want and maybe giving them a few options.
I like that. No, that's absolutely great. Let's talk about some other opportunities that are out there right now. What are you seeing in maybe the retail? And then if you can talk and touch on the looked down upon office space right now.
I'd love to talk about both of those. So retail right now, even if you just look back, maybe the past 10, 15 years, it's been really interesting to watch, somewhat painful, as you know, the Amazons and the online businesses came in, and then you saw all these, you know, smaller stores just go out of business. And it's been a little bit painful to watch, but what's been exciting is some of the new life that's coming in, especially over the past few years, in that retail experience has shifted to become more of an experience-based business than just buying a widget. Like if you want to buy a widget, your Radio Shack type of widgets, you're going to just click a button on your phone and that widget's going to show up in right 1 or 2 days.
Right.
But if you want an experience, you want to go and have a drink, or you want to go and for kids, it's the Build-A-Bear thing, or, you know, you want to build a toy, your kid wants to build a toy, or you want to throw an axe, you know, axe throwing is a new chain that's spreading across the country. Any of those sort of retail experiences, wine tasting, brewery, all of those are bringing in new life into retail, but it's also changing. You know, it's hard to take what was a Radio Shack, which were just butt ugly on the inside, and make it look really, you know, for an experience, we want it to have a certain feel. Right now, it'd be more typical to have higher ceilings and beams and lots of window or natural light or whatever. And so there is a bit of a painful transition going on, but there's a lot of excitement there as well for the just the experience-based retail.
I think experience-based retail, and then also the type of retail that we're seeing not go places is like, even down to, I'm just thinking in here in Memphis, the, you know, ice cream stores or barber shops, or there's still a lot of things I think in retail where there's opportunity on the smaller retail side that is I think still a compelling asset to invest in, just because again, it can't be Amazon, it can't be shipped, it can't necessarily be DoorDashed. It's something where you got to actually go and like, and again, you know, that's experience based, the ice cream shop, the, you know, the barber shop, the liquor store, whatever it is, it's all still, you know, experience based retail, but just a little bit different. Even
you reminded me of another one. Have you seen the ones where they'll take a space, let's say it's 3,000 square feet and no one's leasing it, and then they'll have three concepts come in and lease that space together, and one will be like a coffee shop concept, and another will be like empanadas or Latin food. And then something else will be over here, maybe knickknacks or touristy items or whatever. And all three of them will share the space. Mm-hmm. And that's been kind of cool too.
Yes, I have seen that. And I like that as well, because it's kind of like that indoor, outdoor shopping, whatever experience it can be, you know, depending on the space is laid out. But yeah, I've seen that as well. And that's really cool. Talk to me then, if you can, about opportunity, if there is any, in office.
Office. Yeah, office is kind of the elephant in the room right now, isn't it? My gosh, who would have predicted? Who would have predicted that no one wants to go to office anymore? And they can kind of get away with it. So yeah, it's our post-COVID world, is that we have office spaces sitting vacant all across the country. And I've got one right now. I'm trying to help a client get leased, because they consolidated their offices, and so they're subleasing this space. And I've had like two showings in 6 months. I mean, it's just, we just keep reducing the price. And so office, there is always an opportunity in the crisis, right? So office opportunity is to be repositioned into probably residential, but that's not an easy thing to do. These buildings were built for office, not for every unit to have its own, you know, bathroom and kitchen And then you got the zoning challenges and just all kinds of challenges. And so they're really trying to figure that out. It is something that I have my eye on, and I don't think anybody's figured it out, but there is opportunity there. It's kind of like just brainstorming on what that could be. And are there places that could be converted into residential in a way that wouldn't be cost prohibitive? You know, I saw a school recently mm-hmm. that was converted to residential. So that was interesting. But yeah, I mean, there's ways to do it for sure, especially if the numbers can make sense. But there's a lot of challenges too.
There are a lot of challenges, man. And that's, I think that's it, like you said, it's kind of a, in its own right, a TBD in the right locations. I know I'm a passive investor in an office. What is it? Office to storage conversion.
Yes.
It's going really well. Like, yeah, they're ahead of projections across the board, but again, it has to be in the right spot. Like,
yeah,
you can't just do office to storage everywhere there's, because one, we don't need that much storage, I don't think, Americans and their stuff, but we don't think we need that much storage. And then secondly, it just needs to be in the right spot. So, you know, that's a much easier lift, I think, putting up partitions and, you know, roll up doors versus, like you said, running plumbing for every residential, you know, unit inside a building like that.
Yeah, I like that one. I like office to storage because you're, just like you said, you're not putting in a kitchen and a bathroom. So if you're converting office into storage, you're really just building out the framework for walls and doors and, you know, electrical. But that could work really well, of course, yeah, based on, is the demand in that area enough to support it? Because you will have some fairly significant construction costs, but that's a cool one.
Yeah. No, it absolutely is. I'm excited about that project from a personal standpoint. But again, you know, I think it is just an interesting time to be looking at office and going, okay, where does this go in the end? So this has been fascinating. Thank you, Alan, for taking the time to come on the show today and really talk to us about a lot of different asset classes, things that you're both seeing personally and that you have also invested in and done your resume, if I'll call it that, of things that you've done in the real estate space is fascinating, and certainly been insightful to have you on the show today. So thank you for taking the time to come on and share this. If our listeners want to get in touch with you and learn more about you, what is the best way to do that?
Yeah, I'm on YouTube at youtube.com Al Siebes. So it's A-L-S like Sam, I-E-B like boy, S like Sam. That's the best place to find me.
Awesome. YouTube.com Al Siebes. Alan, thank you again for your time today. I certainly appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen. If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.